9 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Live from coast to coast, from Maine to Sacramento. Good evening, I'm Walter M. Sterling, live every damn Sunday. Think about this. You have a kid or two or three, and they are precious, and they are the best thing you have ever done. I have a remarkable 13-year-old daughter. She just turned 13. And she refused to go to school 2 years ago. Refused to go to school. It was not truancy. She likes school. It was avoidance. What was she avoiding? And I sat her down and I said, why don't you want to go to school? Because it was systematic and absolute. She wasn't going. Not her nature, not a rebellious child, sweet as pie, not going to school. It turns out in our conversations that she was being assaulted in school, in an unlikely place, in music class. She has autism and apraxia, and she processes noise, sounds differently. Now, just imagine you being in a room with a bunch of fifth graders trying to learn the clarinet and the drums. Well, that would be hard enough, but if you couldn't filter the sounds, if you couldn't sort them out, and they all came in as a cacophony, as same level, that's assault. It caused her physical pain. And when her mother and I went to the school and said, enough with this, we got the insane answer, which was, oh, one person can't decide to cancel music class. I said, what are you talking about? You're not obligated to have a music class. It's not in the state requirements. It's a gift. You're doing it as an option. All right, that's my problem. And it was solved brilliantly. But imagine if that same kid came home. Think about this. Imagine this. Your kid comes home and their eye is swollen. And then the next day they come in and there are random scratches on them. And the next day they come home and there's a bump on their head. A bump on their head. And you call the school and you say, why is there a bump on my kid's head? Oh, another kid shoved your child. We're very sorry. Did the nurse look at the kid? Oh, no. Did you call the doctor that's on their contact form? Did you call the doctor? Oh, no. We just sent her home with a note saying that you should deal with it. All right. I thought this was done. I thought our culture had shifted in the past 5 years so that there was no longer this type of physical bullying. This is all bullying. Bullying is when you and I are in a situation that causes tremendous discomfort and we can't get out. We're trapped and we have to deal with whatever comes to us because we can't get out of it. This continues into adulthood, by the way, whenever you call up Verizon. We get assaulted. Your child gets assaulted in school. The last place. Imagine every day you send your kid out the door and you don't know what physical condition your child's going to come home. This has haunted me. And the person in America who has dealt with this effectively and often is Catherine Michael, an attorney and a leading advocate nationwide for the rights of students with disabilities. Her work is focused on education law and child safety, ensuring that schools are held accountable for creating safe and inclusive environments where all students can thrive. You just have a big lawsuit that started up in Indiana. Catherine Michael, welcome to Sterling every damn night.
Thank you for having me. And we do. We actually have a number of lawsuits in Indiana, but we've had them in Ohio and nationwide. on the topic of bullying, and it is worse now than it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago, and it's certainly not what we saw in the 70s or 80s. Bullying can really permeate a child's life in a completely different way now with social media, and especially with the type of violence we're seeing in schools. We're seeing children with life-changing injuries, traumatic head injuries, permanent facial injuries, really, really terrifying stuff.
Why has it increased? I thought our culture was so aware of this challenge. School systems were so aware of the challenge that this was on the top of the list, that it was not going to happen. And you're telling me it's worse.
It's worse. And, you know, I think there's a variety of reasons for that. One reason is that with social media, we see it able to follow a child within school and outside of school. The second thing that I think we have going on is we're beginning to see a level of indifference with schools that we did not historically see, where teachers are so overwhelmed. They may have 30, 35 kids in a class, so they're seeing hundreds of kids throughout the day. They feel, you know, overworked, put upon. It's really hard to track what is happening with a child from moment to moment to moment, class to class. And so I think we're beginning to lose children in the system in a way that we didn't see once upon a time, where, for instance, a child may have had the same teacher all day long, or had a few change in classes, but had a teacher of record that was very involved. And so you take this combination of factors where the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, teachers are seeing hundreds of students. It really makes the public school system ripe for all sorts of horrible things. I mean, Walter, we've talked about the increase of school shootings. This is part of the problem, is that children are going in and becoming very disconnected within the system.
In fairness, when you and I were in elementary school, there were classes of 30 to 35 kids, and there was no nonsense. There has to be some, and those teachers had the same schedules and the same curricula and the same responsibilities. Why are these teachers overwhelmed by this and ours were not?
Well, I think I had a more unpopular opinion on that.
Go ahead.
For
I want to hear
different reasons.
I want to hear the unpopular opinion.
I think we expect less now from teachers than we historically did. And that's not to say that they're not absolutely overwhelmed, but at the same time, I think 20 years ago, we didn't have staffing shortages. If a teacher had a class where their students were running, you know, crazy, amok, it wouldn't be tolerated within a school system. Now, and I think this is the teaching shortage, I think it's teachers' unions, we see teachers who are very weak. They don't have a lot of support in a classroom. They don't have a lot of training. So I'm not saying this is based on the individual, Walter, but they're coming in completely untrained, without a lot of support, without a lot of background in this. And then you have a situation where if they have an out-of-control classroom, there's not a lot of repercussions for it. And that can lead to problems for a whole variety of reasons. The other component is that we're losing a lot of people who were very, very talented and would have gone into teaching to other occupations. It's a major issue now, and schools are having to work very hard to try and recruit those people back through transition to teaching type of programs.
All right, coming up in just seconds, Catherine Michael, an attorney and leading advocate nationwide for the rights of children. We're going to talk about, as a parent, what I can do, what you can do when that kid's about to leave for school in the morning to make sure the kid's safe the rest of the day. What can a parent do? Coming up in just seconds, Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I explain why you shouldn't tell your parents why the crack house across the street is about to get raided. Coming up in moments on Sterling. Yeah!
every damn night.
What is the saddest place on earth? Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. Now, are you driving the car that has no heat tomorrow, or am I?
I might be driving the one that has no power steering.
Details coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Every officer should get a free shot. Details later, the people of Walmart. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling Every Night, inspired by Jimmy O. Yang.
I'm not Korean, I'm Chinese. And he looked back to his friends, he's like, oh, pinche chinito, huh? And I'm like, sir, you do know that I can understand what that means, okay? I have Mexican friends back home just like you. He was like, no, I'm not Mexican, I'm El Salvador. And I'm like, oh, great, now I'm the racist.
Catherine Michael is at the front line of protecting our kids in school. What a horrible thing I just said, that there needs to be somebody who's at the front line of protecting our kids' safety and comfort at school, which is a progressive problem, bullying a progressive problem. Catherine Michael lives it every day, sees it in public and private schools across the country. Tips for parents, Catherine. What should a parent do, ask, who to talk to before the kid goes to school? How do we make sure our kid's safe?
I think the first thing is to not just expect that bullying happens. I mean, there's a difference between when our kids go through the turmoil of adolescence, right? You're always going to have where there's disagreements with friends. They're learning to navigate the world. That's very different from being harassed, intimidated, and assaulted. And so the first thing that parents need to be aware of is that that can happen, and that is not a normal rite of childhood, and they need to be on the lookout of it, you know, and just making sure that that's not happening. And the second thing is, if it starts to happen, families, parents need to document this. Do not just tell your child to go and speak with a school counselor. You need to send an email, put it in writing to the school. Here are the problems we're having. And if you have to do that every week, then do it. A lot of parents feel intimidated by taking those steps, or a child will tell the parent that they're going to make the situation worse. But documentation can become really critical if we have a case where we're going to argue deliberate indifference on behalf of the school. It's not just talking to the teacher in the pickup line, it's putting it in writing. And you can do that with diplomacy and grace in a way that's not overwhelming to school staff, but it needs to be done. And the other thing that parents need to think about is, if the situation gets problematic enough, is alternatives to the school your child is in. The worst thing we can do is keep a child in a situation where they are fearful every single day, getting assaulted, really having the psychological impact that's going to affect them for the rest of their lives. It is not worth it because you think somehow you're teaching them resilience. What you're actually teaching them is a learned helplessness, that there's no way out. And that's certainly not what we want anyone to experience. I mean, Walter, you and I wouldn't go into a workplace every day where we were tricked down the hallway, kicked. If we went to the bathroom, who knows if somebody there is going to beat us up. That's unacceptable in every other facet of our lives. And it should not be acceptable just because it's a school system. And so that really, parents need to come back to that, because there is this inclination of families to initially, when it first starts happening, really thinking, okay, I'm not sure what to do about this. And they let it go on longer than it should, so that by the time they get to me, unfortunately, it's often at a crisis point.
Catherine Michael, a remarkable attorney based in Indiana and Texas, and just a great human being. Who do I send those emails to at the school? Do I just send them to the teacher? Who do I send the emails to reporting that my kid is being bullied, assaulted, tortured, teased?
Yeah, the principal is a great place to start. The superintendent, if the school has an assistant superintendent who's supposed to do disciplinary issues, the more people you can connect if there's a problem, the better off you're going to be. Because while the teacher may be overwhelmed or not sure what to do, if you're reaching out to a whole number of people, then somebody we would hope would do something. And even if they don't, you really are making a case for what's happening in that school district. And Walter, one of the cases that I currently have, and I think you've seen them on the news as well, we have a parent who emailed superintendents, principals, teachers of record, all before her child ended up getting a traumatic brain injury. And so we could really show that the school knew what was going to happen. And that what parents don't often understand is there's got to be foreseeability in these cases. If you have a school that has no bullying and something happens to your child one day, that's a very, very different issue than these schools that have become inherently dangerous to our kids. And it's something that no parent wants to live with and no child should have to.
Catherine Michael, an attorney and a leading advocate nationwide for the rights of students and disabilities. She's a partner of Connell Michael LLP. Their phone number I will post on my Facebook page, because if I say it now, you're just going to forget it. I know you. Catherine Michael, a fantastic advocate for our children, always a terrific guest. Thank you so much for being on Sterling every damn night. Walter M. Sterling, what Catherine was describing to me was training for prison. Think about it. When a kid goes to public school, they're greeted by a person in uniform and a badge. They're told to be quiet. They're told to get in a single line and march to a classroom. They're not allowed to talk in the hall. Don't talk in the hall. You have to be here on time. You're welcomed by a bell and a person in uniform. And if you want to go to the bathroom, you need to get a pass, a written pass from an official person. You have a scheduled lunch. The lunch schedules, in my experience, are never long enough for the kid to finish their food. The food's horrible if you get it in the cafeteria. And I'm like, what does this remind me of? Oh, it reminds me of prison. This is training kids to be prisoners. The methodology, the greeting, the whole thing's just like prison. One of my kids is in a very different school, and you know how they're greeting her? Every morning she's greeted with joy. Absolute joy. They're thrilled to see her. They're happy to see her. Mm-hmm. And she runs into the school. She can't wait to get to school because she's greeted for what she is, a special, remarkable young lady. I'm Walter M. Sterling. It's a live radio show. I've got a phone number. We can talk at any time, 855-839-1210. And I have email that I answer. It's WalterMSterling@gmail. WalterMSterling@gmail. And a spectacular website, Walter Sterling Show. Yes, because being on this radio station is not enough. It's not enough. I have to have social media presence with you, Sterling. Every damn Sunday.
This is Matthias Bohm-Bell. Coming up, my live report on Hollywood and the movies. Only here on Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling every damn night. Inspired by flashers.
Women need to flash their men as much as possible. Coming out of the bathroom, flash them. Walking through the living room, flash them. Pulling out of the driveway, flash them. Mowing the lawn, flash them. Just flash them.
Boom, boom, Hollywood. Sterling every damn.
Are you honored to have a jingle like that? Boom Boom Hollywood, live in Hollywood, live on Sterling every damn night. Are you honored to have that jingle?
I'm so honored. I'm even more honored than the people tonight getting awards at the Screen Actors Guild Awards here at in the excitement of Tooltown. It's a great honor, and I thank you every time I get to be on this program to listen to that fabulous jingle.
Fabulous jingle. Now, who were the big winners tonight so far in the awards? What award is it? What?
This is the Screen Actors Guild.
Screen Actors Guild. Right, got it.
So these, you know, we have so many of these. I don't blame you for not keeping track. I mean, the big one's coming up March 2nd. It's the Oscars, and everybody knows what that is. But, you know, once in the 30s, they figured they'd settle labor disputes by giving Oscars out as little trinkets to actors. It managed to solve that problem for the studios. And, of course, actors have been hungry for adulation and applause ever since. It's not just enough to hear the applause in the theater. You want to have a statuette too. And who can blame them? They work hard trying to be other people all their lives, and sometimes they're very good at it, and we like them. Like Kieran Culkin, who you liked in A Real Pain, Walter. Well, he won Best Supporting Actor in a Motion Picture tonight for A Real Pain, so I know you'd be probably aligned with that one. But then on the other hand, the Champagne, as you like to call him, won for his imitation of the great legend of music, Bob Dylan, in A Complete Unknown, which was quite a shock. I didn't think that he was actually going to get it. Kristen Bell hosted the awards, and of course the Screen Actors Guild, which merged on March 30th, 2012, with the American Federation of Radio Artists, puts this on, although you rarely hear anything about the radio artists in these programs. It's all about movies and TV these days. And I think they selected some really interesting performances. Demi Moore won for her performance in The Stubbsons, as she did in the Critics' Choice Awards just a few weeks ago, which I reported live on this program. Jane Fonda won a Life Achievement Award. She, of course, seized the moment to talk about political issues that she believes in, and I guess she wouldn't be Jane Fonda if she didn't. Some nice ensemble comedy stuff going to Only Murders in the Building.
Really?
The
what did they win?
Ensembles.
What, say
the
that again.
Ensemble
what did
act,
ensemble Only Murders in the Building, what did series. They win? Ensemble in a comedy series. Got it.
In a comedy series. But Martin Short, for the same show, won Best Male Actor in a Comedy Series tonight.
Wow.
And one of your favorites and mine, Gene Smart, took away the female actor in a comedy series for Hacks. And you and I know that that's incredibly well-deserved. Colin Farrell won for male actor in a miniseries movie for The Penguin. Also, the big awards tonight going to Conclave for that ensemble cast in a motion picture. And it was actually quite touching when Isabella Rossellini went up to the microphone and hoped that Pope Francis would have a speedy recovery from his current illness. And I thought that was unusual for Hollywood to acknowledge a pontiff, but they did tonight, and I thought that was a nice change of pace. So there you have sort of a wrap-up of the fun down there. They move very quickly, but it's all actors patting themselves on the back, so it's a very interesting thing to watch, because you see these actors that think they're going to make it, and unexpected people take the award away. I don't think anyone expected Timothée Chalamet would take that award from his fellow actors with other great performers lined up for that, but he did, and so sort of an interesting night here in Hollywood tonight.
Were you surprised at any of the awards? Did any of them make you go, no, that's wrong?
No, I didn't think so. I was I'm surprised by the fact that Wicked got almost no mention at all during this award from the fellow actors, because it was certainly a popular picture money-wise at the box office, but this isn't the Oscars, and it's certainly not the Critics' Choice Awards. Here the actors are looking at fellow actors doing their thing, and so I don't think that they're that much concerned with box office as they are performances. Of course, the sad part was when Lisa Kudrow went up and did the In Memoriam sequence, and you know they do these occasionally at the Oscars, and always at the Oscars, and now at this show too, and just to some of the names that we lost this year, it just boggles the mind, because you know about it at the moment, and then you think, oh, they've got to be still with us, because as my grandmother used to say when she'd watch an old Betty Davis movie on TV, she says, there's Betty Davis. I said, she's been dead for 30 years. She says, no, she's not. I just saw her right there on television. Anyway, the idea is that so many great people, Bob Newhart, Mitzi Gaynor, M. Emmett Walsh, Dabney Coleman, Ron Eli, all honored on screen with a few moments of some of their films. The French actor Alain Delon, Chris Christie Tofferson, Tony Roberts, Steve Lawrence, Louis Gossett Jr., Richard Lewis, Martin Mull, who I always loved, Gina Rowlands, Terry Garr, David Lynch as an actor and director, of course, Shelley Duvall, Donald Sutherland, Maggie Smith, and the great James Earl Jones, who we all wish we had a voice like. Sorry to see those folks They were truly greats.
The awards that have been given so far at the Screen Actors Guild, to me, make sense. I understand that Timothy Chalamet was in a category with many other greats, but gee, who could deny him an award for what he did, the amount of prep that he did? That's pretty darn interesting. Rarely, you know, it's been a long time since I've seen actual hits and familiar people winning awards. And I thank you, sir. Was anybody, Boom Boom Hollywood, live in Hollywood, was there anybody wearing something really stupid?
Nothing stupid. I will add that Timothy Chalamet had as his date his own mom. He said at the microphone, "It took me 5.5 years of my life to have this honor, and it was an incredible honor of my life to play this man." As far as clothing, the only clothing I liked really, and I'm not a clothing expert, you know, I dress very conservatively, but was David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson went on to present the best ensemble performance in a drama series, which went to Shogun, which is really fantastic. And she was wearing this really cool, like, dark windowpane glass that had a dress, which had white blooms all over it, but it looked like a really classic 50s movie star dress, and Gillian Anderson was great, and the company and she still have great chemistry on stage, even only for 3 seconds introducing an award. I wish they'd do something again.
I bet they wish they would do something again, too. It's, you know, to have those gigs, those are tasty and would build a wing to the house. Boom Boom Hollywood, how do we keep track of you on Facebook?
It's Matias Bombal's Hollywood on Facebook. That's spelled MatiasBombal Hollywood on Facebook. One more time. MatiasBombal Hollywood on Facebook. And I thank you, Walter.
At the awards, was anybody blind drunk?
No, but there were some moments when it was suggested by some of the presenters to raise a glass and have a drink if you ever appeared in an early soap opera, in an earlier sequence. There were sequences on screen throughout the show of the very first breaks people had in movies, either in soap operas or in earlier appearances. And that was on tonight. Yeah.
Very clever. All right. It's always great to talk to you. Boom Boom Hollywood, live from Los Angeles. I am grateful that you are on Sterling every damn Sunday.
The Pink Monkey Cabaret was shut down recently because it had all sorts of code problems, like no running water, no bathroom facilities, no fire exits. And the owners of this wonderful business, a landmark business for this community, were not complying with business ordinances for sexually active business. They may not have had running water, they may not have had a bathroom, but that champagne room was a buzzin'. And hey, you can always use the restroom out back, can't you? What's wrong with that? Old-timey, getting in touch with how it used to be. Club shut down recently, and all of a sudden there's people inside it. Officers come a-running. According to Deputy Eric Kaiser, Mario De Leon, Angel Martinez, and Serena Gonzalez picked up because they were in the office rifling through papers, probably looking for Social Security numbers to help in their play to help migrants who are here illegally. They're also trying to figure out if there was money hidden somewhere in that club. The most important thing to steal at any strip club is the pole, a fire hose for a fireman. It's like an AK-47 for a drug dealer. It's important to have, and you need that to make that club wonderful. The club was just shut down last week, so it's loaded up with good stuff inside. Poteet, Texas is not necessarily known as one of the fancier areas of Texas. It ain't Houston or San Antonio. It ain't Austin. Poteet, Texas is a little sleepy town without a lot of entertainment choices. One of those entertainment choices obviously shut down. Let's hope we can reopen that club and bring some dignity back to Poteet, Texas. From the closed champagne room, this is Velo Hool. Strippers on the loose. Sterling, every damn night.
Sterling, every damn night. Inspired by the truth.
But trust me, in the future, you'll be much happier if you always tell me the truth.
Wait. I'll be happier?
Well, you don't think I could make you happy if I wanted to?
This is the truth. You're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life.
You're cute. I like you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Feel the dough. Eat the dough. J.B. Bakery. Salida and Steve. Sterling every damn night.
Look at this. We now have a bakery blessed by the Catholic Church. By the rock and roll priest, Father Jim Drucker, visited the J.B. Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey, the official bakery of Sterling Every Damn Night. Not, they don't pay for it. It's not product placement. It's like not one of those stupid morning shows where you think they're interviewing a local retailer. They're not. They're doing a commercial. All those local retailers on morning shows, morning TV shows, those are all paid for. Those are all infomercials. This is not. I respect the owner of J.B. Bakery because he's running a business, and you walk into that bakery, and it's like going to the bakery with your grandmother. But now, Father Jim Drucker, Stephen, Selena, who work at the bakery, welcome to Sterling Every Damn Night. I have a very important question for Father Drucker. Are you ready, Father?
If I may clarify one thing, the Catholic Church didn't bless the bakery. It was Father Jim Drucker who works with the Catholic Church and for the Catholic Church.
That's completely unimportant.
Question, sir,
Father Drucker, you're on the radio. That's completely important. You know better than anybody that we just do bullet points and radio facts. Radio facts radio facts have some resemblance to facts, but not really. They're radio facts. Now, when you witnessed the relationship between Steve and Selena, Father, do you feel they have a future, or is it a troubled relationship?
It looks like there could be a future, for sure, absolutely. He's a very quiet young man, by the way, and she also. So it's very hard to discern with quiet people. But having broken bread with them very nicely, and then having received a bunch of donuts to bring back here to McGuire Air Force Base, and his generosity and his kindness, it was overwhelming. And I really felt like I was back on York Street, where we were so poor we could not afford to buy nothing, no bakery goods. Well, we would go up in the corner to the bakery shop, and the man was so nice, because, you know, we were dirt poor, he would give us a dozen stale donuts a day old for like 10 cents. I shared that with Steve, by the way. But yes, there's a chance, certainly. Absolutely. And I gave them both a blessing as well.
You said they're very quiet. Do you think that's because they are slightly shy and modest, or they have a tremendous secret to hide?
I think part of it might... No, I don't think there's any secret to hide. I think they're certainly somewhat modest. And plus the fact he was busy, had his mind going, that he was working, and the traffic in the breakaways, meaning the people coming in, was absolutely marvelous. And it's really true. When you go in, it's like bakery heaven. I mean, they had everything. And the head baker is Turkish. So I stood there with Mehmet speaking Turkish to him. He's from Mardin, Turkey.
Father Drucker, do you speak Turkish?
Come on. Yeah, Chokas. But I speak it fairly well.
Were you a spy?
No, I was not a spy. Make that clear. Absolutely not.
All right, Steve.
All I did was God's work in a foreign country with the Catholics on the base, and I get very close. Almost every priest in Turkey, because it's 92-93% Muslim, almost all the priests there are Italian. Some of them are Maltese, and they all are Franciscans. Some conventionals, OFM conventionals, and some Capuchins.
All right, we don't care. We don't care about the demography there. We just, Father, you're picking up airtime. Stephen and Selena, were you shocked when a Catholic priest came into your bakery?
Walter, he came in at the perfect time. Later in the day, I was Selena and I were just getting some work done. We had just come in, and the shop was very busy. We were helping out many people, and he got to see the bakery in full action. There was a lot that Sunday night crowd looking for, you know, the last minute treat. And he was really shocked and blown away. We were very pleased to meet him, and we asked him some wonderful questions. and he got to look around and see the magnificent display that we have with our slices of cakes and all the seasonal treats that we have for St. Patty's Day coming up. And we went out to dinner and had a wonderful time, and I just enjoyed listening to him and everything that he had to say. He told us about his life and the interesting people that he met.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Stephen and Selena. And
especially you too, Walter. He spoke very highly of you and how much he loved working with you.
When you're with Father Drucker, that is what you do. You listen. I appreciate the fact that you spent time with him, and I appreciate the fact that Father Drucker visited. This is the J.B. Bakery. It's in Burlington, New Jersey. It is a small, family-owned bakery. And what he makes is clever and creative and worth the trouble. Thank you very much for being on Sterling every damn night. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and we're coast to coast tonight. That's right. It's a live radio show from WGAN in Maine to KFBK in Sacramento. This is the horror of many people in radio. They're like, how does he get all these stations? And why is it do so well in the ratings? It's like nothing we do, they say at the other radio stations. It's like nothing we do. It's on KMOX for 3 hours a night. Oh, my God. And KDKA for 10 minutes later. And the radio people are shocked. What shocked me about the people in the radio industry and this show, this is a successful show, and I'm not bragging. If I knew exactly why it was successful, I would grab it, but I'm not. What's shocking to the people in the radio industry is that they don't get it. And the other part is they don't know how to do it. So they'll listen to this, well, maybe we could do what Walter's doing, and then we'd have ratings like his. And then they listen and they go, no, then our job is to bash the Democrats. How's that working out for you exactly? Like, how's that? It's pretty much working out for you the way it works out at MSNBC. In this city, right now, this show, listen, ad buyer, person who runs the numbers at the planner, the media planner, with your planner computer, this show has more listeners in this city than MSNBC or CNN has viewers in this city.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Go up and down the dial, AM or FM. This is the only live radio show you're going to hear in America. Sterling every damn Sunday, weather.
All news, more news. Day and night around the clock, it's all news. You get it all when you set your dial to Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night.
All right, Walter M. Sterling in the 18-wheeler with you. This is the best time of day to be driving. Four wheels or 18, this is the best time of day to be driving. Because the temperature's just right. You got the cabin just right. The dash lights are glowing, not too bright, not bright. There's no wacky sounds coming out of the engine. The tires seem to be steady. The wheel isn't jiggling on its own. You hit the brakes, there's no weird sound. This is the time of day to be driving because this is the moment when you own the road. It's your road. And the next stop will be the stop you choose at a big rest stop, a good rest stop. Bucky's would be nice. Wouldn't that be nice? But Bucky's has a weird policy. They don't like trucks. They have 100 gas tanks, but they don't like trucks. The Love truck stops, pretty good. Iowa 80, the best truck stop, the biggest truck stop in America, where you can get everything you need to have a CB radio. A CB radio. There was a moment in time where you could get a factory install of a CB radio in a Cadillac, in a Chevrolet, in a Chrysler, a factory install of a CB radio, and you wanted one. No, it wasn't for emergencies. It was so you could say things like, bear in the air everywhere. If you know, you know. Bear in the air everywhere. And then sometimes I would say wacky things because I'm on the radio, and a very senior trucker would get on the channel and tell me to shut up. And I would, because I was afraid of him. I was afraid that if I drove past his truck, I'd be shot. But what a remarkable craze that was, that everybody had a CB radio. I mean, everybody. And you got on the highway, pick a channel, and it was busy. Really busy. Was there any meaningful conversation going on? No. The only actual service it provided was letting me know where speed traps were. And this bizarre sense of connectiveness to anonymous people going through the same thing. And then it evolved to chat online from CompuServe. What? Yeah, there was a program on CompuServe, the predecessor to AOL, that was called CB Radio. It was called CB. And it was set up with 35 channels, and you picked a channel, and you went on there, and you did chat. And this is when chat was not just sex. Oh, there was a channel for sex, and another channel for gay sex. But between them, there was just chat. Hundreds of people needing to connect. And I would do things like on the channel I was on, I'd say, okay, now I have to go out on a date. And there'd be 50 people on the channel. I'd have to go out on a date at 6. And I'd leave at 6, and I'd leave the computer on, the modem. And I'd come back at 11, and I'd say hi, and 20 people would ask me, how was the date? And that was the connectiveness that we never had before. And it was wonderful and innocent. And as long as you didn't do anything stupid, like give out your real name. As a result of this, there's been an evolution in dating online. And the first thing that you used to do when you met somebody to go on a date, blind date, first date, whatever, is you said your name. Hi, name, where are we going? Then you'd go. Today, online, you could give your address, what you do for a job, what city you live in. The last thing you're going to give somebody is your name. In the culture of online dating, the last thing that they give out is their name. Right before online dating existed, there were a lot of dating ads, dating advertisements in good magazines, like New York Magazine. New York Magazine had, you could buy an ad, advertise yourself, and go on a date. I did that twice. I actually went on a date as a result of an ad I put in New York Magazine. And both times, these ladies were very nice, and I liked them very much. And there was no way in hell I was going on a second date. What did they do wrong? Nothing. This was an important lesson in dating life, which is that if somebody doesn't call you back, text you back, want to have a second date, it has nothing to do with you. You're fine. You just weren't right for them. But that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. And that is a hard lesson to learn. All right, I've got a phone number you and I can talk at any time at 855-839-1210. My name is Walter M. Sterling. See, I give that out on many, many, many 50,000-watt clear channel radio stations across the country. I'm not afraid. My name is Walter M. Sterling, and the name of this show is, ready? Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Now, join lesbians in space.
Is so much harder. It feels so much more delicate. Like, hitting on a woman feels like trying to skip a stone on a lake. Hitting on a man feels like throwing a brick through a window. I'm like, I don't even really care. I just want to see what happens.
Fit Ferrari always gets this.
I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to tell a story that's a little close to home. So later in my NYPD career, my aunt had a basement apartment that was two doors down from my parents. When it became available, I said to myself, you know what? This is a good idea. At least I can keep an eye on my aunt and my parents because they're getting older in life. So across the street from my parents' house, the house had sold several times and the neighbors got lousier and lousier to the point where an investor took over the house and had rented it to a bunch of crackheads. And I knew something was going on in the house because I would see comings and goings at all hours of the night. So one day I was making my way into the Bronx courthouse and I ran into a former coworker and he asked me, he goes, does your parents still live at that address over in the Bronx? I said, yeah. He goes, listen, I got a search warrant from a house across the street. I says, what's going on? He says, garden variety crack house. I said, okay. He goes, I'll tell you what, I'll give you the heads up when we're going to hit the place. I said, okay, fine. So I knew I couldn't tell my father or my mother because if I told my mother about it, she'd lose sleep over it. And my father, who thought he was Beretta, would ask me 100 questions and he'd probably wind up sitting on the front porch with a camera the day of the search warrant. On top of that, there was a mob social club that was about two blocks from our house, and my father, during his daily walks, would give me updates on the mobsters coming and going. And I said, Dad, I work in auto crime. I have nothing to do with these guys. Please, stay out of it. The one person I could share the story with was my aunt. So I told her the story, and my aunt is like, well, which window should I look out? I says, I don't know. Whatever window, just be inconspicuous. So she says, okay, oh, this is great. My aunt was all excited about it. So a couple of days later, I'm at work. I'm working late. I get a phone call from my former coworker. He goes, about this afternoon, about 3 o'clock, we're going to do that search warrant across the street from your parents' house. I said, okay. And that was it. Later that night, I got home about 11 o'clock. There's no activity on my street. It's nice and quiet. I go home. I slide my key in my basement apartment door. I get into the apartment. As soon as I get inside, my aunt's banging on the floor with a baseball bat. I come up the stairs, and she wants to talk. And she's telling me about all these things with the search warrant. She saw the cops rush in and everything. So I'm like, all right, that's great. A couple of days later, I run into my father, and he goes, did you hear there was a search warrant across the street? And I couldn't tell him I knew, so I said, no, Dad, I didn't. He goes, what kind of detective are you? He figured that I had no clue of what was going on. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Presumption and Dysfunction.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. Now, are you driving the car that has no heat tomorrow, or am I?
I might be driving the one that has no power steering.
Details coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late-night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Every officer should get a free shot. Details later, the people of Walmart. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling Every Night, inspired by Larry David.
None of your business. How about that?
Here's the story of a radio executive who met with enormous success. His head overflowed with brilliant ideas, and he really knew how to dress. But his bosses were all idiots, and all his brilliance was for naught. So he had to set on his own, like some disgraced cosmonaut. And now he's back on the radio, sharing his brilliant insights. And that's why we call this program Sterling Every Damn Night. Every damn night, every damn night, every damn night, it's Sterling Every Damn Night.
We're hitting the Dollar Tree time of the month. The month goes like this. At the beginning of the month, I probably will go to the gourmet supermarket at least once to get fish and meat. I am very sure that I only want to get fish and meat at the gourmet supermarket, not at the chain supermarket. But then, a little later in the month, I find myself only going to the chain supermarkets. But then, right about now, I'm going to Save-A-Lot and to Dollar General for my food. The adventure, of course, is to go to Dollar Tree. And the thing about Dollar Tree is each Dollar Tree is very different. Some of them are actually run. Most of them are not run at all. The cashiers spend most of their day saying, my shift is over, I'm on my break. That's how most of the cashiers spend their day. And three quarters of the shelves are empty. The refrigeration unit in the back is empty. The truck didn't come in. Or, even more exciting, nobody asked us to unload the truck.
Did you know there is a place called the Dollar Tree? Not to be confused with the one in my backyard. In my world, money does grow on trees. But it's a little shop where you can get a little bit of everything for almost nothing. I was in the market for party favors for my 13th bridal shower, 13 times a charm. And I couldn't bear the idea of giving all my guests the same Hermes Birkin bag again. So I said to my assistant, let's go to this Dollar Tree and see what we can scrounge up. We get there. It's like this very organized dumpster full of all these strange treasures that all cost $1.25, which is a very confusing business model if you ask me, but what do I know? I'm just a billionaire. I approach a young lady with a name tag that says Carol, who looks like she's seen better days. I say, Carol, I'd like a tour of the establishment and a Riesling if you have it. She says, Reese's are in aisle 3. I say, oh, that must be a new vintage. I'm looking for bridal shower favors. My budget is $500. She gasps, says, $500? I said, my God, no, Carol, $500,000. How embarrassing. You must have thought I was such a cheapskate. Show me your favorite pieces. So Carol and I did a dollar store sweep, and now all of my party guests will be getting a very fun Dora the Explorer gift bag that includes one party horn, two packs of batteries, one expired lipstick, a candle that smells like cinnamon spice butthole, and three pregnancy tests. I paid $47 and I gave the remaining $500K to my new bestie, Carol.
She was disappointed there was no actual tree. All right, good evening, Walter M. Sterling, live, Sterling every damn Sunday. My significant other of the moment, my wife, the mother of my children, or she says, your only wife, with your nonsense. She's always wanted to go to Germany. And I said, all right, let's see if we can make that happen. Well, guess what? You and I and my wife are going to go to Germany and see fairy tale castles like Mad King Ludwig's. And we're going to Bavarian villages like Rothenburg. No, this isn't a bit. This is true. And we'll go to Germany's most beautiful city, medieval Munich, the world famous Hofbräu. Fine dining, luxury hotels, Mozart, Salzburg, and in Austria. We're going to go to Austria and Germany, a majestic Zugspitz. $55.69, that's the price. $55.69, and that includes your airfare, which could be $1,000 if you went separately. Call this number. You ready? 888-733-9494. 888-733-9494. We're going to go to Germany, or go to conservativetours.com. It's spectacular. We're going to see the high culture, art, industrial genius of Germany. And we're going to eat a lot of food. We'll have the best time. Here's the number, 888-733-9494. We're going to go on a trip to Germany. You, me, other misfits, my wife. We're going to see the country the way it should be seen, put together by the terrific people at Conservative Tours. Conservative Tours. Get the information there. Or call, ready? 888-733-9494, 888-733-9494. Get the information. Decide if you'd like to join me and my wife, Katie, on a tour of Germany this fall. We will have the best time because I'm just a hoot. Oh, just a hoot. It was great. You and I got to talk to Catherine Michael about the work that she does to keep kids safe in school. And all I keep thinking is, there was none of this when I was in school. There was no physical threats when I was in school. There was a lot of bullying, though, that would not have been tolerated today. But today it's gone to a different level. And the level is that when you and I were in school, those teachers would tolerate nothing. They had zero tolerance policies for your nonsense. One little glance from the teacher, one little finger raised, and everything settled down. because they were teachers, and they were there to teach us how to read, write, do arithmetic. That's it. But now, tragically, teachers are part of the bullying cycle, either by not stopping it or amplifying it. Teachers have been known to hit a kid, make fun of a kid. And more importantly, if a kid gets hurt in school, the school should be applying medical assistance through a nurse or a doctor, and they don't. They send the kid home with a note saying, gee, something happened in school. We're really sorry. Be sure to take care of it. What? That's a good school. They send them home with a note. It's terrifying to think that when you and I send our kid into school, especially if our kid is a little challenged, that they could be walking into a physically or emotionally threatening situation. And the thing that I learned is when my kid avoids school, it's not truancy. And legally, that's an important distinction. It's not truancy, it's avoidance. It's my job to learn, why is it being avoided? Sterling, every damn Sunday.
Sterling every damn night, inspired by women's studies.
You're cranky because you need to get laid.
Public Shame Radio. Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night.
Great friend of the show, great friend of mine, legend in broadcasting, a fantastic celebrity guest host of this show. And his name is TJ Lubinsky, who had a personal relationship with Jerry Butler, put Jerry Butler on the television many, many times to host the rock and roll specials that TJ Lubinsky Productions created. You had a personal relationship with Jerry Butler, 85 years old, who passed away this week. Hello, TJ.
Yeah, sure did. But I got to ask you something before we get into Jerry, which is, you know, a melancholy situation. You grew up in New Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey. I went to Bradley Beach Grammar School. Now, when I came along, it was the 70s. Did you, in fact, have the same teachers that I had, which always had the sewing needles in their hair?
Yes, many of them had the sewing needles in their hair.
They were like 100 years old, and they, yes, instead of a pin or whatever, they had the sewing needle. And man, they would take that thing out and smack your hand if you fooled around.
Wow, that I didn't have that at my school. Was this a Catholic school you were at?
No, it was over 2,000 people in Bradley Beach, but you didn't. You didn't mess with these teachers. I mean,
that's the bottom line. You see, you didn't mess with these teachers. They were great teachers. All they had to do is look at you with one eye, raise one finger, and silence would follow.
Yes. Yeah. And that was yes. Yes.
And the principal of my elementary school had been an Air Force fighter pilot in Korea. And his jacket of his suit never came off in the 6 years I was there. That jacket never came off. That collar was the straightest thing you ever saw. And there was no nonsense with the man walk the hall. But he knew the name of every kid in his school.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, but I wouldn't have called him a pal. That principal wasn't my pal.
No.
Stepped out of line, you know, forget it.
No, these are not our friends.
I was a class clown, too. So, you know, I was always stepping out of line because I was definitely the class clown. So,
did your mother say to you, TJ, not everybody's going to think you're funny?
Yeah, I got that one. But, you know, I mean, it was a small town. My teachers were actually my father's teachers. So everybody in Bradley Beach had the same teachers. Substitute teachers were his teachers. And, you know, sometimes I would make these poor teachers cry because I was what they called incorrigible. And that's the word they used, incorrigible. And, you know, it would make my father's teachers cry, and then they would call my father. Oh, God, forget it. It was like, you know, a bad day if you ever did that.
Well, I'm glad we've both reached the spiritual point in our lives where we can readily admit that we are from New Jersey.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
That,
yeah,
that
Jerry
didn't happen
is, Jerry's
first,
a bit, you know. While. Sad thing with Jerry. I mean, I, you know, he wasn't my original choice for host. The funny thing was, I wanted to get Smokey Robinson, but Smokey was doing a Motown thing and a regular show for NBC at the time. So Suzanne DePass was really open to it, but we just couldn't make it happen. So then I was hoping for Dion, but his manager and I never got along, and his manager said, over my dead body, he's not an oldies act, man, so he won't be on your show. And then I was just, hanging in another place I used to go on the Jersey Shore called the Yakety Yak, which is a nightclub in Seaside. I go in that night trying to figure out, who could this host be? And as soon as I go in, For Your Precious Love is playing, and the entire place is dancing to For Your Precious Love with the Impressions, and it was like a signal. I knew I had to get Jerry, and I did, and he was the most amazing, classiest dude I've ever met.
Tell me a story about Jerry. Well, tell me a story about working with Jerry Butler.
Well, he was very aware of politics. He had been a Cook County commissioner. And he also knew a lot about psychology. So I remember telling him sometimes, I was like, Jerry, can you shrink me while we got a couple minutes, while we're waiting for for something going on? And he said, yeah, sure, Lubitsky, what is it? And I'd say, why was it when I was a kid? I had two brothers and a sister and a father and a mother. My mother would dole out the fries. My father would get four. My brother would get three, my sister would get two, I get one. And then we'd go all around the table, I get one. All around the table, I get one. And then when my parents weren't looking, my brothers and sisters used to take all my fries. He said, that, my friend, is politics. now you know. Now, he was the absolute best. And my family kids me because we had an issue one time with Aretha Franklin, where somebody turned the air conditioning on. It was in her contract. You couldn't have air when Aretha was going to sing. And, she went crazy. And Lou Rawls was there with Jerry. And I said, look, we got to get her to come out. She's got to come out. I mean, this is important. And Lou Rawls said, forget about it, man. It ain't going to happen. And Jerry said to Lou, in the presence of my wife, you know who you're dealing with. He's not likely to change. And so I was able to get him to come out, and he's so classy. Betty Everett, that time we had her with Betty Everett, and it took a long time to find her, and she almost died the first night. Second night he came out and held her hand, and now this was a wonderful man who knew the music, and he also taught me a lesson about the old performers. Everybody sometimes says, well, royalties, everyone got screwed by the record company. Jerry was the only performer I knew who said, don't listen to that stuff when you hear it all the time, because what the groups won't tell you is they got a bottle of wine, they got a car, they got the bills paid, and you had to sell a lot of 19-cent records back then to sell a million worth of records. So, he really was a sharp dude. I mean, he was really just amazing. And then getting with the Impressions when they got together again, that was great. I mean, just a beautiful, beautiful guy, and I'll miss him very much.
Well, he lived a current life in that he was a Cook County, Illinois commissioner. He was one of the men who ran Chicago for many years. And the first time I was in Chicago and I saw a local newscast and Councilman Jerry Butler, I'm like, who? What? And sure enough, there he was talking about very serious issues in Chicagoland and kept himself current. He was not an oldies act because he lived life today. And when he sang with Betty Everett, when he sang those duos on your special, it was amazing. This is TJ Lubinsky. Now, you have a new special coming up very soon. Tell me about that.
Well, I try to be as eclectic as possible with our shows. As much as I love doo-wop and soul and R&B, I realize that we've been making 60s shows now for about a quarter of a century. And when I say 60s, I'm talking about 60s pop, 60s rock, and even a little psychedelic stuff in there. But you have to have seen all 30 shows or whatever to see every 60s act. So I thought, well, let's put them all together in like one mega 60s show. And so, you go back and you realize, oh, yeah, we had John Kay of Steppenwolf with Born to Be Wild. Oh, yeah, Rob Grill and the Grassroots with Let's Live for Today. Oh, yeah, Four Tops. Oh, yeah, Eddie Holman. Oh, yeah, you had all these just incredible groups. Some of them were pop, like Davy Jones and Peter Noon, and the audience just loved their acts and what they did. And some of them were like, I'll never forget that we were the first to put the Inagata Davida guys on television, Iron Butterfly, and with their 20-minute version of that song, or Vanilla Fudge with You Keep Me Hanging On. So a little bit of that psychedelic stuff in there. And this show is representative of all those great artists together again, especially because the 60s music, for the most part, is it's gone now. You know, there's nobody who plays it, really.
I love when you told me that Aretha Franklin had not been booked on your shows, and she called you.
Yeah, she did. She wanted to know why she wasn't on. She said, you know, you could try to convince me if you wanted to come and be there. And so I found out she loved Pink's Hot Dogs in L.A. I went and set up a giant barbecue in front of her dressing room where she was playing at like a New Jersey Pack or something. And she came out. I had the paper hat on from my soda jerk days. I said, get your red hots right here. We had like a case of Pink's for her. And she said, all right, you got me. Where do I go? And you know, that was great. So, yeah, she's on the show. I mean, just so many great artists. A lot of soul, Percy Sledge. I mean, all these guys are gone now. But this seminal, too. I mean, even things like, you know, I didn't live through the Summer of Love, but when you see Scott McKenzie in San Francisco and you see the association with Cherish and Never My Love, and you've got, it's like, wow.
It's like, wow. And about that, I had a member of the association on this show. He lives in Jersey.
Was that Jimmy Esther?
Yes.
Yeah.
And good guy, terrific. If you look at the Ed Sullivan performance of the association, Ed Sullivan introduces them for the kids today. Here's one of the world's top rock acts. And I'm like, yes, why the hell aren't they in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Yeah, good question. There's a lot of groups. I have no association with that.
No, neither do I.
I don't know who they do or what they do. I don't know.
Right.
But I will tell you this. We tried to ask people when the show first aired, what was Mary exactly? Along Comes Mary. Can anyone help us figure that one out? A lot of fun answers when we played at San Francisco, of course.
All right, that's T.J. Lubinsky. What date is that special going to be on the air?
Nationally on the 8th of March, so the week after next, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, just check your local listings. New York, of course, Channel 13, 7 o'clock. It's big, man. It's big, and it's cool, and peace, love, and happiness, and all that stuff. For those who can remember, they probably weren't there, but you'll have a chance to try to remember.
But they know the music. T.J. Lubinsky, great friend of Sterling, every damn Sunday.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here to tell you tales of living with our 8 kids in our very old house. How do we afford 8 kids? Well, for one thing, we drive old cars.
Very old cars.
One of them has no heat at all. The other one, the power steering went out on.
Yeah, well, it happens. And the thing is, we try to buy old used cars that will get us by. So we generally stick with, you know, certain brands that go up above 240,000 miles because that's what we do. And then eventually they all kind of wear down at the same time.
Which is where we are now. So we're debating tomorrow. You have a place to go. I have a place to go. Which one of us will take the vehicle that actually has heat?
Right. And we also have like teenage kids who work in town that they can either walk or they can drive. You know, if it's below 19 degrees, generally they get the car. It's difficult right now because when these old cars kind of plats out on you, you're still stuck driving them. You still got to get to work.
It's still 100% better than massive car payments.
Right. Who wants to do that? I promised myself years ago I would never buy another new car.
And have you seen the average monthly car payment that people are making is like almost $800?
Which is ridiculous. You can buy a small house for the price that you can buy a car for, and I'm not doing it. I would rather juggle who's going to drive what while the other thing gets repaired, who's going to drive the one without the heat or the steering until we get it fixed, than have a car payment.
As a matter of fact, when we take the car in to get it repaired, after paying cash for it, we call that making a car payment.
Yeah, that's
when we pay the mechanic.
I mean, really, why not just do that once every few months rather than do that once a month and have a nice new, quote, fancy car? There are a lot of things that we do where we just, you know, trim the fat, per se. But on the cars, I think we do save a lot of money. I mean, just insuring them costs a lot.
But again, not as much as if they were new.
Right. I am kind of thinking, though, about a Cybertruck. What do you think, honey? Would I look good driving a Cybertruck?
Well, you'd look good driving anything.
There it is. Shopping for a Cybertruck tomorrow morning.
Follow me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
And if you're looking for me, I'm on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Dan and Becky, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Every officer should get a free shot. Details later. The people of Walmart. Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling every damn night. Inspired by Hawaii.
Did you hear about that new rule in Hawaii? They're not allowed to laugh very loud anymore. They have to keep it at aloha.
Like you, for some reason this week I've thought, what did I do last week for work? What exactly did I do? Popular question. Many people seem to want to answer it. Anxious to write it down, to become a patriot and an American. Let me share with you what I did on any given day last week. You ready? I woke up in time for this show to be not the end of my day, but the middle of my day. Therefore, I go to sleep usually at 3 or 4 a.m. I'm on six nights a week. If you want to hear me six nights a week, I'll tell you how to do that. Either live within the Philadelphia area and hear me on 1210 WPHT, or get the Audacy app. It's a stupid name. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Who named the company that? A-U-D-A-C-Y. And you can listen to me every night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time. 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time. Three gorgeous hours of live radio, six nights a week. I don't work Saturdays. Other people work Saturdays. I'm on six nights a week. Therefore, when I do wake up, which is usually at 1 in the afternoon, I start thinking about the show. I'm preparing the show all the time. I'm like a whale eating krill, always eating. Then I make coffee. I make Dunkin' Donuts coffee, and my wife thinks I measure it because I tell her I measure it, but I don't. I just dump it into the little cup. It looks about right. I like it extra strong because I'm in radio. Everybody in radio drinks coffee too strong, and terrible coffee. We like terrible coffee with bad creamers, the whole thing. But I drink it black because I'm a real man. And then what did I do? At 2:30, I have to pick up my 13-year-old. I have made her lunch the night before, and when she comes home, she's going to want dinner. It settles down. I make the coffee. I eat something. Usually it's yogurt with fruit in it. I put fruit in yogurt. That's what I usually eat. The grapes are really good this time of year. Those green grapes are amazing right now. They're addictive. I go to pick her up at school, bring her home. She's very excited because now she's 13. She can sit in the front seat. She is so excited to be able to sit in the front seat. She comes home. She's self-actualized. She plays by herself or with her best friend, and it's complicated what she plays. She plays Roblox, and she plays with Zoobs. You got Zoobs in your house? Everywhere. I have Zoobs in my house. Zoobs. And I make her dinner. She, at the moment, is obsessed with chicken parmesan. She'd eat chicken parmesan every night, and she eats a lot of it. You know, she's 13. She's growing. She eats a lot of it. Then I make sure at some point I put seed into the bird feeder, and I have this amazing app called BirdFy, B-A-R-D-F-Y. And on my phone, I can watch my bird feeder from anywhere in the world. It's fascinating to see these birds at it. I spend a lot of time at that, probably more time than I should admit, but I'm always thinking about this show. Then I scoop the litter. Does anyone else in the house scoop the litter for the three cats? No, oddly not. They all wanted the cats. They all love the cats. but they won't scoop the litter. Do you have this problem? No one scoops but you. 855-839-1210. Sterling every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Coast live from WGAN in Maine to KFBK in Sacramento. Good evening. You and I are in the four-wheeler, the 18-wheeler, and this is the best time of night to drive. And now, weather.
Sailing every night, lost in space. Mission control, take it shot. Dave Scott.
It's the legendary Dave Scott, an expert on UFOs, Bigfoot, metaphysics, all of the things we really like, the reasons that we are drawn to the History Channel, to ancient aliens. This is Dave Scott, who owns spacedoutradio.com, spacedoutradio.com on YouTube, and he hosts a national show in Canada, our 51st state. Welcome, Mr. Scott.
Welcome, and thank you for having me again. I appreciate it.
Now, do you have news? You have UFO news for our network show?
Well, there isn't a lot of news happening in the UFO world right now. We're all waiting to see what Anna Paulina Luna is going to be doing with her new conspiracy theory group in Washington, D.C., to see what they're going to do about disclosure and get everything out. So that is the real hype right now. But, of course, because we don't have any updates, I do have some stories for you, Walter.
Go right ahead, Mr. Scott.
All right. Well, it was 50 years ago today in Yamanashi, Japan. It was 7 o'clock at night, and two young boys, 7 years old each, Masato Kawano and Katsuhiro Yamahata, spotted two orange lights in the sky. One light flies towards Mount Otago, while the other drops into the vineyard behind the nearby Hinode home estate. The boys go to investigate because they're interested in this, and they find a flying saucer covered with strange symbols. Suddenly, a 4-foot-tall humanoid in a silvery suit exits the craft. Inside, the boys spot a second being, the creature having a larger pointed ears, dark brown skin, and their heads are covered with so many deep wrinkles that they obscure any facial features except for three metal 2-inch-long fangs. The two bizarre entities seem unaware of the boy's presence until the being outside the craft suddenly spins around, places a hand on Yamahata's shoulder, and makes a sound like a tape recorder running backwards. The boy faints. Kawano grabs his unconscious friend and retreats. Now the boys, both in hysterics, alert their mothers. Both women are skeptical but agree to follow them back to the scene. As they approach the estate, they notice the bright orange pulsating light, the vineyard. The light intensifies until it is blinking and blinding. It then rockets straight up into the night sky and zipped away 50 wow. years ago today.
Wow. Wow. What do you think it was?
Oh, goodness. I think they probably saw something unreal. I do. And the fact that if it was just the two boys, you could claim it as just childhood imagination. Okay? But the fact that their mothers saw this as well, that they had the know-how to run home, get their moms, and their moms come running outside and actually see this, I think it shows proof that something happened.
I believe that not only our government, but the Australian government, Canadian, UK government, Russian government, all knows exactly what this is, because it's all, they're all flying into secure airspaces. These are all going into airspaces that commercial jets can't go in. And as a result, over time, they know exactly what these things are, and they have decided to not say what they are.
I agree with you. And, you know, but there is a real concern from the U.S. and other governments around the world. It's twofold. Number one, Walter, they're worried about the technology. Okay, it doesn't matter whether it's Russia, China, any adversary of the United States, Canada, or whoever it may be. What they are worried about is that that type of technology falling into the wrong hands. For the United States, it would be China, Russia, Iran, North Korea getting hold of that technology. Or if it's vice versa, they're worried about the U.S. getting that technology first. And so you have to play that card on a defensive game. But the other thing, too, is can the world handle disclosure? Can the people of this planet really handle the fact that we are not alone in the universe, that we have been had people taken over years? Some have never come back. They've just vanished. Other people claim that they're part of hybridization programs where they have, for women, they have their eggs taken by these beings, and men have their semen taken by these beings, and somehow they manipulate the fetus that is grown from them and then put their own DNA in there to create hybridized humans/aliens. I mean, there's a lot of strange things that are going on, and you have to wonder, is the world ready for that? If they are not, that is the bigger concern, because it will change religion. Every religion, doesn't matter whether it's Christianity, Hinduism, Catholicism, any religion out there, it will change. It will change the perception of the public. And many people will also wonder, you know, how is this going to affect everyday life, from the economy to food to energy to absolutely anything?
The population of the world is ready. The leaders of the world are not, because the minute it's disclosed that there's something bigger than the chairman, the prime minister, the CEO, where there's something bigger, it disrupts the nature of leadership around the world. And we all of a sudden become observers. We become subjects. We our leaders are not actually our leaders. Dave Scott, spacedoutradio.com, spacedoutradio.com. See him on YouTube. His website is spacedoutradio.com, and his website is really cool merch.
Perhaps we need some outside universal threat to make us recognize this common bond. I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world.
Ronald Reagan made allusions to alien forces not once, but five different times, including a speech before the United Nations.
And why did he say that five times? Once, it's a nice figure of speech, but he said it in the United Nations. He said it to Gorbachev in Geneva. Gorbachev responded, saying he didn't disagree with him. He said it at a high school in Maryland. Why bring that up unless there was some reason for bringing it up?
Friedman says Reagan also dropped hints in private about UFOs. One such incident occurred following a special White House screening of the movie E.T. The story was related to others by producer Steven Spielberg.
When the showing was over, Reagan got up, put his hand on Steve's shoulder, and said, you know, fewer than six people in this room know the whole story. Now, I have a close colleague that got that direct from Steve. What I'm saying is our society has been brainwashed.
Walter M. Sterling, good evening. It's a live radio show. Welcome. I've got an email, waltermsterling@gmail.com. If you send me an email, I will send you JB Bakery's brand new recipe, one that Steve just came out with, and it's spectacular. Be a great dessert. Finally, you're going to deliver a great dessert other than pudding. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Now, join the lesbians in space.
Your future husband is never going to be the guy.
Thank God for that. You're right. My future husband is never going to be the guy. He's never going to be anything, actually. Because I'm gay.
Sterling every night, inspired by Europeans who think they know America.
I wake up at 8 a.m. to the sound of gunshots and violence. Then after that, I have breakfast, an 18-piece fried chicken bucket with a 2-liter bottle of Coke. Then at 9 a.m., I start my daily commute from Los Angeles, California to New York City. Along the way, I drive through intense poverty and homelessness.
All right, it's bread pudding. Really simple, remarkably delicious bread pudding. That's the recipe that I will send to you if you send me an email and say, I'd like the bread pudding recipe. You have the ingredients. This one's easy to make. I make it very clear to JB Bakery that their job is to give us recipes that are simple and don't have ingredients we've never heard of, the way many excellent baking menus have. But no, his are simple. Great bread pudding. Send me an email, waltermsterling@gmail, waltermsterling@gmail, and I will answer it, and I will say to you, how did it come out? Let me know how it comes out. I make chicken parmesan for my 13-year-old. She's obsessed with this. This is all she wants. It's so easy to make that I'm embarrassed that I didn't do it years ago. Here's how I make chicken parmesan. Would you like to know? Let's try it together. It takes me 15 minutes at the most. Here's the deal. I get chicken breast fillets that are sliced thin. I don't want to do all the slicing because it always messes up. Whenever I try to cut a chicken breast properly, one side is always much thicker than the other, no matter what I do. I'm not the guy to do it, but I can buy them already done. And I always get Amish ones. I think it's important to do things that are Amish. There's no risk in getting Amish chicken. I get the Amish chicken, and here's what I do. I make a coating mixture of flour, plain planko bread crumbs, plain bread crumbs. I get real garlic. I mix it in there. I pound the garlic thing, get rid of the, you know, make the cloves all nice. And onion powder, paprika, and McCormick spices makes an interesting thing, and the label just says poultry spice. That's all it says, is poultry spice. I got that. I got some basil, fresh basil, and that's it. And I mix it all together. I can't tell you how much of each. I'm not the guy. I just mix it together. Then with the chicken breasts, I take them out, don't rinse them off. I take them out, I put them on a cutting sheet, a plastic cutting sheet that will immediately go into the dishwasher when I'm done. And I salt them on both sides, and I pepper them on both sides, and then I put plastic over them, and I pound the crap out of them. I just pound those chicken breasts with a cleaver. I just pound it until they're as soft as could be. And then, and this is the important, this is the trick, leave them alone. Let them sit there about 10 minutes while I set up the coating. And I set the oven to 440 and let it get hot. I take out a big frying pan. I put olive oil in the bottom of the frying pan. And what the other thing I do is I throw some of the garlic cloves into the frying pan for no reason. It's just what I do. When ready, I coat each of the chicken breasts with egg. I've beaten up two eggs. I coat them in egg, and then I coat them with my special mixture of flour, breadcrumbs, and all those seasonings. But you make any seasonings you want. I take each of them. I put them in the frying pan, and I cook them on 4 minutes medium heat for each side, 4 minutes each side. Then I put them on a baking sheet, which is coated in avocado oil. Why avocado oil? It doesn't smoke. Olive oil will smoke, so avocado oil won't. I put it on a sheet with avocado oil, each one of the chicken breasts. Then I put on the Parmesan cheese. I happen to put on a lot. Then I put on fresh mozzarella cheese on top of that. And then here's where people screw up. I just put a little tomato sauce on top of each one. People screw up by putting a lot of tomato sauce on each one. It doesn't need it, and you shouldn't do it. Just do what I say, all right? Let's not have any arguments about this. I put it in the oven for 11 minutes, and that's it. This is easy. Pound them, coat them, fry them, and bake them. Pound them, coat them, fry them, and bake them. My 13-year-old, who wouldn't eat anything but pasta and dino chicken things, you know, dinosaur shaped things, that's all she would eat, and Diet Coke. Whoever heard of a 13-year-old liking Diet Coke? But that's what she drinks. What am I going to do? There's just so much I can worry about. Speaking of worry, let me know how it comes out. Would you try it? Let me know how it comes out. WalterMSterling@gmail.com Let me know how it comes out. Hugh Jackman, you know that cool star sort of? He's in love with Sutton Foster, but their relationship's crumbling under pressure of public scrutiny over their romance. They're completely in love, but it comes with so many problems. Well, first of all, he was married. Secondly, she was married. Love-struck Sutton Foster is finding romance under the microscope with superstar Hugh Jackman to be tough. To be tough. They're worried that their relationship will fizzle out within only a year. The Regastar couple are talking about where they go from here. Foster fell for Jackman when they starred in the Broadway show. As his own marriage began to crumble, it began to crumble because of her. But now, Sutton Foster has found herself entwined in a romance with the 56-year-old Wolverine star. She's found herself in a situation that has brought both joy and scrutiny. Of course it brought scrutiny. A source close to the actress revealed to us that while Foster and Jackman are completely in love and relieved they don't have to hide it anymore, the attention it has brought upon their door has become a significant burden. They, at the beginning, they said, we want privacy. Well, if you want privacy, you don't go to a PR firm and say, be sure to tell everybody we want privacy. You just don't talk about it. You don't make announcements. You don't say, I want privacy. That's how you're going to get no privacy. And they were both married. Let me help you here. You're a middle-aged guy, and you meet your Sutton Foster, and you imagine that the problem with your marriage is going to go away and this new woman is going to solve your problems. You're an a-hole. You're a complete a-hole. Who you married, that's the deal forever. Unless there's abuse from either party, unless there's abuse, then you run like hell. But if it's just they're kind of annoying, or you now have to listen to them gargle or snore, or they tell you to do things like pick up the towels, wear clean underwear, wash your hair. If they tell you annoying things like that, that's not the reason to get married, to get a divorce. You don't get a divorce. You work it out. How do you work it out? You work it out the way I do. My marriage is none of my business. I view my marriage as an outside issue. She has all sorts of theories and wackiness. My children have theories and wackiness, but I keep to myself. As long as I keep to myself, I'm not really involved with my marriage. I never, and listen, do not go shopping with your spouse. Never go to a supermarket with your spouse. You'll get a divorce for sure. Do we really need that big a jar? Are you sure you want it? You're going to finish this cereal if we get it? That fruit doesn't look good to me. No, I see these married couples in the supermarket. Every time I see a married couple in the supermarket, I pass them by and I say, always shop alone. And whenever I do that, the guy laughs his butt off and the woman looks really ticked at me. She always looks very annoyed at me, the other woman. No, I never shop with my wife for anything. And that's how the marriage stays together. It should be in the marriage vows. We will never shop together. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Public Shame Radio. Sterling every damn night.
Your heart.
Walmart.
Sterling Shops.
Walmart.
Sterling Shops. Walmart.
Lawrence, Indiana. Probably one of the great places in flyover country, home of a mighty, wonderful Walmart. The other night, police patrolling that parking lot, there was a feller who was parked in the fire lane. And yeah, you're not supposed to be parked in the fire lane. That's for emergencies, etc. So the police pulled behind, asked him to move. The feller went bonkers, got out of the vehicle, ran towards the cops, fists clenched and ready to go. Officer gets his free shot. If someone comes at you and they're ready to punch you, when you're a police officer, this should be standard operating procedure, in my opinion. If some citizen comes running at you with a clenched fist, you should be able to punch him once or twice. Well, this was recorded. It's a video you can find online. It is called Damn. No, it's misspelled. D-A-M-M-M. D-A-M-M-M. 33 seconds. The citizen was in a white Explorer. For whatever reason, that just leads to crime. Cops get him subdued. They looked in that Explorer, and oh, what do they find? Police say a black AR-style rifle right there in the Explorer. The gentleman, Mr. Armstrong, refused to identify himself and told the officer to, well, off. Blank off. You can fill the four letters there. Maintaining officer safety is the goal of every police department. We salute our cops. They're the best. And you have some guy who's completely unhinged. The cops should be able to punch him. I'll stand by that. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night. Inspired by Robin Hood.
You know who Robin Hood is? Yeah. That Disney movie where Robin Hood's a fox? When you were little, did you think he was handsome and then, like, your crotch gets a headache?
Are you kidding? That voice and how he didn't wear pants?
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the Owl and Dawn.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, Train Hard, Rest Harder. Sitting up on the bench, I sipped from the water bottle, drinking it more slowly than I had after finishing my run. Some lower body and we're done, Tristan said. I won't torture you with too much core work today. You know, since you're supposed to be taking it easy this weekend and everything. I pursed my lips. Thanks ever so much. Once I stood, I let him coach me through weighted lunges in all directions and a few rounds of deadlifts. Almost done. His gaze flicked back and forth between me and the stack of weights. Sorry there's no squat rack here, but I think, as we established last night, we need to make sure you're keeping up with your squats. His words, combined with the memory of his hands on my body, increased the heat simmering inside me. I'll make do with what we have. Front squats or goblet squats? I'll let you choose. I bent down to retrieve the dumbbells I'd used for the lunges. Uh-uh. Try again, he said from behind me. What? We both know you can go heavier than that. I glanced back at him over my shoulder. Yeah, but it's different without the rack. I have to be able to actually pick these up. Tristan inched closer and rested one hand at the small of my back. I know how strong you are. His breath fanned across my neck as he spoke. Give me 10 good squats and we'll call it a day. He let his hand drop and gave my butt a quick squeeze before stepping away. I didn't realize how much I craved more of his touch until he let go of me. But there was only one way to earn it. I went to the rack against the wall and returned with the heaviest weights I thought I could get up to my chest. Blowing out a puff of air, I hoisted them into position and steadied myself for the first squat. Slow and controlled, he said. And get nice and low with good form, or else I'm going to make you start from the beginning. My legs already ached from the run, followed by the lunges. But I kept my knees pressed out to the sides as I dipped down and back up. One, I counted to myself. I repeated the movement, fighting to keep the tremble out of my arms as I held the dumbbells up in front of me. Almost there. His raspy whisper sent a different kind of shiver through my tensed muscles. You got this. How the weights didn't slip out of my hands, I had no idea. I maintained my grip and sank down into my heels yet again. Every time I rose presented more of a struggle, but I was determined to complete the set. Once I finished the 10th squat, I exhaled a long sigh of relief and set the dumbbells down. Tristan was on me in a flash. He grabbed me by the waist and yanked me backward, sending me crashing into his bare chest. I love watching you move, he growled in my ear. Your powerful body, your flawless form. Do you know how long I've been dreaming of a moment like this? I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and you're listening to an excerpt from my book, Train Hard, Rest Harder, which is available at Amazon and at thealandon.com. If you have anything you'd like to share with me, don't forget, you can always email me at smuttythea@gmail.com. Now, let's see what happens next. He drew my earlobe into his mouth, giving it a sharp nip. His palms roamed over my stomach and hips, grazing the lower edge of my bra with every stroke. Dizzy with desire, I closed my eyes and leaned back, resting my head against his shoulder. Strong hands rose to cup my chest, kneading it through the damp fabric. As his fingers sank into my flesh, he kissed up and down the side of my neck, dragging his teeth over the sensitive skin. Muscles, curves, the perfect package, he murmured. I rolled my hips backward, rubbing along the length of him. His hold on me tightened, and he let out a strained groan. Placing my hands atop his, I maneuvered them toward the bottom of my bra. My sweaty skin and gasps for air made it challenging, but he wrenched it off over my head, then folded his thick arms around me again. He resumed his massage with one hand while the other skimmed over the front of my body. Sparks shot straight through me with the added manipulation, and I writhed in his grasp. They were further ignited when he cupped me through my tight little shorts. I knew I was supposed to relinquish all control this weekend, but my intense yearning for him drove all other thoughts out of my mind. Without leaving his embrace, I swiveled to face him. His glimmering stare burned through me. Looping one hand behind the back of his neck, I guided his head down toward mine. Our first kiss was frantic and explosive. His tongue plunged into my mouth, and I met him with a playful jab of my own. While I reveled in the tangy taste of him, I explored as much of his body as I could reach. I trailed my fingers through the downy hair sprinkled over his firm pecs, following its path over the definition of his abs. He felt as good as I'd imagined, if not better, and I set out to trace and memorize every single line and ridge. His breath caught in his throat when I arrived at the waistband of his shorts. It was my turn to tease him, and I groped him through the loose fabric. Tristan drew back, his lips parted as he panted for air. Hold on a second, he said between breaths. I'm supposed to be calling the shots here. Already, I felt more like my old self, despite being half-naked and a disheveled mess. Are you really so surprised? Grabbing the ties of his shorts, I pulled him toward me, closing the gap between us. I thought you knew by now how whenever I set a goal for myself, I always go after it. He recaptured my mouth in another searing kiss. Heat radiated off his bare skin as his hips collided with mine. Still, though, his hands slid up my sides, grazing the outer curves of my chest before coming to rest on my shoulders. You knew the rules coming in. His fingertips dug into my upper arms. Before I could react, he slammed me against the wall next to the weight rack, and I yelped. He silenced my cry of surprise by covering my mouth with his. Hungry kisses blazed a trail down my neck and over my collarbone. He delivered a rough squeeze to my chest as his lips glided downward, my flesh spilling out between his fingers as he dropped to one knee. Reaching for the top of my shorts, he yanked them down to my ankles, bringing my panties along with them. I lifted one leg, then the other, and he tore my sneakers off my feet before flinging aside the remainder of my sodden clothing. When he rose, he pinned me to the wall with his full weight and shoved his hand between my thighs. Oh, I think I need to stop here for tonight, but you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, Train Hard, Rest Harder, which is available at Amazon and at thealandon.com. Don't forget, if you have anything you'd like to share with me about what you just heard, you can always email me at smuttythea@gmail.com. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling every damn night.
And now, 3 good minutes.
Walter M. Sterling with Sarah Britt, Associate Director of Corporate Responsibility for PETA. It is great to talk to you, Sarah, because I'm a big supporter of PETA. I have 3 beautiful cats, spayed, neutered, and chipped. And why do you suggest at this time that people shop for animal-free clothing? What difference does it make?
We wouldn't dare wear the skins of our dogs or, you know, one of the cats that you have that you love so much, right? So it really doesn't make any sense to be wearing the skins of other animals who also experience pain and fear and love, right? I mean, every piece of leather means that an animal, like a cow, who just wanted to live their life, ended up suffering and dying. But the great news is that that's not how it has to be. There are so many fashionable vegan options available today. There is no acceptable reason to be wearing the bits and pieces of someone else's skin.
Now, what other materials can take the place of leather?
There are eco-friendly and animal-free fabric everywhere nowadays. I mean, even at your favorite stores like Target or Walmart, Macy's, Nordstrom. I mean, if you want vegan, gorgeous vegan leathers, they've got them. And that's because brands nowadays, including very large designers, are innovating big time. You know, they are designing clothes from plants like soybeans, you know, wool that is made from coconuts, you know, or even creating vegan down puffer coats from recycled water bottles. So these choices not only save animals and the planet, but they look amazing too.
You and I are talking to Sarah Britt, Associate Director of Corporate Responsibility for PETA. Where do I get more information, Sarah?
PETA.org, it's PETA.org, is the place to go to learn more about how, you know, making leather from dead animal skin is not only cruel, but it is destroying our planet. And that website is also chock full of information about eco-friendly, animal-free materials that will undoubtedly make leather obsolete.
You convinced hundreds of fashion brands to stop selling fur, cashmere, other animal skins and wools, and you persuaded more than 100 airports, financial institutions, and self-storage companies to ban glue traps. You're a hell of a seller. How about one or two tips on how to sell?
You know, I just try to speak up for those who can't speak up for themselves. And that includes animals who are exploited and killed in the fashion space. PETA will only continue to come out with more investigations, you know, uncovering what is actually happening to animals, not just cows who are killed for leather, but sheep for wool or alpacas or, you know, goats for cashmere and so many other materials.
Sarah Britt, Associate Director of Corporate Responsibility for PETA on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Paid pre-recorded partnership with PETA. A great way to enjoy day. Sterling Every Damn Night.